God has given the church many gifts for the building up of the body. One gift is administration, the spiritual ability to guide, govern, manage, and correct. Church leaders are charged with keeping the church on the biblical path. As God has given that charge, He has also provided the gifts which enable us to fulfill that charge. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
The rotten feminist fruit we are seeing did not emanate from the 60s. This is Wretched Radio. No doubt you, like, well, the rest of us, would say that the feminist movement went off the rails in the 60s. The Betty Friedans, those that wanted to separate women from having to be chained to the stove in the kitchen. Gloria Steinem, we got to liberate women so that they can be their authentic selves and live any frisky way that they want to without accepting any consequences. In other words, that they can be intimate and take the lives of their child. That second wave feminism, third wave feminism, separates women from their own gender. And that is why a new book titled The End of Woman, How Smashing the Patriarchy Has Destroyed Us, goes about the business of tracing the historical roots of the ideologies of second and third wave feminism and the direct line back to first wave feminism. First wave feminism, the ideals were fine. The public presentation of the goals, we would all say, yeah, we're down with that. How did it get off the rails? And the contention from Carrie Gress in The Spectator is, it never went off the rails. It just kept leaving the station further and further. In 1912, a group got together and called themselves Heterodoxy, and they met in Greenwich Village. There were 25 charter members, lesbians, bisexuals, labor radicals, socialists, to talk about women's rights, which extended far beyond education, far beyond voting. It was about smashing the patriarchy so that there could be, presumably, total equality. The second and third waves of feminism are not new manifestations of feminism. They're actually first wave feminism. Full blown. Now, we got to be careful here because on the surface of it, and there were many feminists in the first wave that were not involved in the socialism, the Marxism, the smashing the patriarchy movement, but there were enough women that were. They were a part. Yep, it was a choir, and there were a number of different voices, but theirs was there, and they were singing, and it was loud, and it cultivated the soil for what we see today as a complete obliteration of womanhood. What is a woman? Who knows these days? How did that happen? Well, it didn't come from third wave, didn't come from second wave, came from the first wave. And her contention in the article at The Spectator called Think the First Wave is a Model for Women to Think Again. There are some people who are saying, well, let's just attach an adjective to first wave feminism because everything about first wave feminism was good. And by the way, I have said many those ideals that you and I saw that were being tackled in first wave feminism, they were good. She's getting at what was going on behind closed doors and that we shouldn't affix any sort of moniker to first wave feminism because at its root, it was already corrupt. So here's what she said. Why would we want to build a new feminism by grafting on the adjectives conservative, pro-life, or Christian? It is a broken and distorted vision of the human person and the male-female relationship that lie at the root of the problems plaguing society today. It's a poison root. It can only bear poison fruit. We need to reject it. I think we need to do it wisely. I think we need to do it thoughtfully because I think the perception of most is first wave feminism seemed pretty benign today. And by the way, that's also one of the problems. First wave feminism, if we are going to fix an adjective to it to kind of reclaim it, got to be careful because their goals are radically different than the issues that we are confronted with today. It is, we are living in the hookup culture, divorce, the LGBTQ movement, the pro-abort movement, gender separate, gender affirming surgery. All of those are the issues. And her contention is it's all because of first wave feminism. Even if feminism, she said, had been the best solution for the abuses of a bygone era, there's absolutely no reason to think that more feminism will solve the contemporary problems it has undeniably caused. And so it is, having read this article as I was reading through my stack of stories, I ran into one article after another. They were not, this was not some sort of behind closed doors effort. Let's start publishing a bunch of articles that expose feminism as being the source of so many of our cultural problems these days. It just so happened that feminism was just a part of so much of what is going on these days. Here's the headline from Fox News. New State Department diversity chief. Feminism believes U.S. is a failed historical model with a colonizing past. Isn't that nice? So the new State Department diversity chief called America a failed historical model, demanding the destruction of tradition at every juncture. Do you smell that? That smells like feminism, doesn't it? Secretary of State Anthony Blinken announced the new diversity chief, touting the woman for bringing expertise and a fresh perspective on how we build a workforce that reflects America. In other words, what's going to drive employment isn't qualifications. No, no, it's going to be gender, sexuality, and skin color. That would be your DEI. What are these this woman's experiences? Well, she owned two companies. One was a DEI consulting firm and Black Women Disrupt. An initial Black Women Disrupt? Well, that's telling, isn't it? In which this woman interviewed Black women involved in creative spaces around the world. She had a whopping 125 subscribers. Bringing a fresh new voice. Here's from the article. These, again, written by separate sources. She embraces a feminist leadership style, but one that counters white-centered feminism trends and narratives. In order to make change, we've literally got to be about the work of dismantling that traditional structure at every juncture, said the new diversity chief. We cannot have equity without dismantling structural racism, patriarchy, and heterosexism. What does inclusion mean if white supremacy remains intact? She co-authored a guide titled Feminist Leaders for Feminist Goals, championing critical race theory, intersectionality, and the State Department has high confidence in this new appointee, who's a feminist. Now, all stripes, all shapes, all sizes of feminism, but so much of what we are seeing in culture today has at least tentacles in feminism. More Gen Z women leaving the church than men. So this is by the Christian Post, which is on some days very similar to Fox News, but men make up a majority of baby boomers who have left the church. Gen Z, majority who leave the church, men. Millennials, majority males who leave organized religion. But guess what? With Gen Z, more women are leaving religion. And they go about the business of identifying why 61% of Gen Z women identify as, drumroll please, feminist, far more than any other generation. Oh, so feminism is affecting the church. By the way, abortion should be available without restriction, 54% of Gen Z women. No restrictions. Right up to birth. Right after birth, apparently, that's Gen Z women. They're feminists. it has its tentacles everywhere. Here's another article from the National Review. Intersectional gender studies. Why are so many people on these campuses pro-Palestine, pro-Gaza? Feminism is the contention. There's gender as technology, gender and sexuality in Korean pop culture, feminism in the age of empire, decolonization, all courses being taught at Harvard University. A recent panel at Rutgers University, sponsored by its gender studies department, had a panel called Palestine is a Queer Feminist Struggle Against Imperialism. Women need to unite with Palestine because they've been oppressed. All women are always oppressed. Therefore, they stand on the side of the oppressors. And this is from National Review. Feminist activists are certainly trying to lead the pro-Hamas movement. And dozens of colleges, dozens have signed statements of the document titled Palestine is a Feminist Issue. Is that the only cause for our cultural confusion? No, but let us not be deceived. Feminism, even of the first wave variety, most certainly is a big contributor. This is Wretched Radio. If you're familiar with the Tomorrow Club's outstanding ministry, oh, what a testimony. Eastern Europe, Africa. Poor, poor, poor places. The Tomorrow Clubs go in. They assemble the kids every week, preach the gospel, have them memorize the Bible, sing songs, love on them, give them some treats. It has been an outstanding ministry for over 20 years, and it's growing like a nobody's business, and it is a testimony to their faithfulness that over 50% of the Tomorrow Club volunteer leaders were Tomorrow Club kid attendees. Now, they, in their villages, are teaching the kids the gospel as volunteers for the Tomorrow Clubs. I got to tell you, that is a testimony. If you love supporting evangelistic ministries that are faithful, that actually preach repentance and faith, it's an outstanding ministry. If you can support it, would commend them to you by visiting tomorrowclubs.org/wretched, tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
Hey, thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. Well, as you've heard by now, the cat is out of the bag. Later this year, our brand new initiative is on the way. We are building a Christian Daily Wire. 8 qualified, theologically sound, and powerful voices in the evangelical world will be joining us here at Gospel Partners Media. I'm talking people like Pastor Tim Challies, Dr. John Krotz, Dr. Greg Gifford, of course, who's already been with us for quite a while, Pastor Brad Bigney, and others. These men will be focusing on helping us continue to create content like podcasts and videos, writing articles and books. Like you, we've seen the degradation of our culture and we have decided to do something about it. Would you please help us launch this Christian version of the Daily Wire? We need your help in order to do it. Please participate in our ongoing $250,000 match campaign. Just visit wretched.org/fellows to get all of the information. That's wretched.org/fellows. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Who will speak for those who are staggering to the slaughter? Seems like right now would be a good time to encourage you to support Preborn Ministries. They're in it. It's a little complex out there with the internet and ordering pills. They're in the game. They're working hard to save babies and save mommies and daddies with the gospel. So if you are energized about life, that's something you can do. You can support Preborn. They provide free ultrasounds despite the accusations of all pro-life clinics. They are holistic. They do care about the mommy too. And they care for the family and they provide training. And it is literally a way that if you have the means, you can be saving a life. Amazing ministry. Preborn.org/wretched. Preborn.org/wretched.
Important dates in Christian history. 405 AD. After 23 years of work, translating from Hebrew and Greek manuscripts, Jerome completes the Latin Vulgate version of the Bible that becomes the standard for the next 1,000 years. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Missing the real problems. Real problem. This is Wretched Radio. You've seen at least a news headline informing you Iran attacking Israel. Zoinks, Scoob. We don't want that mess to escalate into a global war, so we've been watching it with interest, and people, theologians of varying stripes, have been asking some eschatological questions. Is this the end of the age? And the answer to that question is a definitive nobody knows. Most people will not say it's next Tuesday at 11 o'clock. Some will do that. Harold Camping. But most will just say things like, hey, I don't know the day or the time, but I'm just telling you, tick, 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 it's getting real close here. Well, that's still, while not making a specific prediction, is nevertheless doing what I don't think the Bible gives us permission to do, and that is to put a pin in the calendar that says this is when Jesus is returning. He could tarry for 2,000 more years. God waited 4,000 years to send the promised seed of Genesis 3:15. He could delay for 2,000 more years on his timeline. Others are asking questions about containment, who's siding with whom, what if Russia, aka Gog, they get involved in the war. We want to watch it with a great deal of interest. But we also want to make sure that we don't cross any sort of biblical lines about saying this is that. That is not the way the signs are to be read. An article in the Christian Post. The two-state solution misses the real problem. This is a fellow who teaches political economy of the Middle East. And he says the real problem there is hatred. That's the real problem. Nobody's talking about it. That these people who live in Gaza, they hate the Jews. They hate Christians. And while I would say, yeah, that's true, I think that misses the real, real problem. What motivates that hatred? Where does that come from? It's connected to their religion. That's the real problem. It's the source material that people read. I get it. Different Muslims interpret it different ways. But there is enough in the Quran that would lead hundreds of millions of people to say, we should hate Jews. That is the problem. A little bit of a history that was helpful from this article in the Christian Post. The result of the 1967 war, Israel gained control of the area, including Gaza. In the Land for Peace negotiations, which led to the Egypt-Israel peace treaty of the late 70s, Egypt obtained the Sinai, but they refused to take Gaza. Didn't want it. Yitzhak Rabin, he was Israel's former prime minister. He didn't like it, but that was the only way to secure a deal. Subsequently, Israel's policing and occupying status became rather costly, as was feared. In 2005, Ariel Sharon, the prime minister, decided to end the occupation, hoping self-rule and no Israeli presence would bring peace. But as is rightly commented in this article, that was not to be because of hatred. And that's true, but hatred is a fruit. Hatred is not a root. The root of the fruit of hatred is Islam and the Quran. After Israel's 2005 exit, wars followed at the end of 2008, 2012, 2014, all of which involved rockets being fired into Israel. Each ceasefire was broken by Hamas. So what we are seeing is nothing new, except it's becoming even more vicious. Palestinians danced in the streets after the 9/11 attacks on the U.S., Hate is so embezzled in Palestinian society that a March 2024 poll found 70% of Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank said they're satisfied with Hamas's actions. Zoinks, Scoob. This is the problem that nobody is discussing. And the problem is hatred is a problem. But what's causing the hatred? We need to have a conversation again about the religion of peace. Raising the question in all of this that I've heard many people trying to ponder and sort out, well, what should our attitude be about Israel? What is the evangelical concern regarding that strip of land? Do we support it, even when their government, every government makes bad decisions? Do we just support them? Do we support them politically? Do we support this government? Are we just interested in the land? What about the people? How do we deal with this? Thanks to Preaching for God's Glory, John MacArthur at Grace Community Church was asked that very question.
My question is, considering the spiritual state of Israel now in relation to their rejection of Christ, are we as Christians obliged to stand with the nation of Israel, politically speaking?
Yeah, I think we are obliged to stand as protectors of the Jews. Okay, that's Genesis 12. You bless the seed of Abraham, you're blessed. You curse them, you're cursed. God puts the whole world on notice. These are my chosen people. I have a plan for them. Yes, they have followed idols. Yes, they have been punished and judged. Yes, they rejected their Messiah. Yes, they are still, this Jews are living and dying and going out of the presence of God forever now. But still, God has a future plan for the Jewish people. And we have to be protectors of them. I think any nation that tries to eliminate the Jewish people has made a bad, bad decision, because the Bible is filled with the promises of God that no one will annihilate them. And anyone who tries will be annihilated. Now, this doesn't mean that we are required to give them money for, you know, what they do politically or militarily. I think that's a different issue. But we are to understand that God has a plan for Jewish people, and that we want always to pray for the peace of Jerusalem and the preservation of the Jewish people until the time when they see their Messiah and salvation comes to Israel. So it's not the governmental entity of Israel that we support. It's the Jewish people. And they're constituted now, obviously, globally in their own nation. And so we should be protectors of that people and that nation. There is no biblical promise about protecting Arabs or Scottish people or English people or Hispanic people, but there is a warning from God to be sure you're protecting Jewish people. And if you do that, God promises to bless you.
Thank you to Preaching for God's Glory. If you would like, by the way, to hear Dr. MacArthur unpack the plan for Israel, encourage you to visit the YouTube machine, John MacArthur, The Church Is Not Israel. We don't have time to play all of this, but it sounds a little something, man. Like this.
Well, all Israel will be saved. That's in the future. There will be the salvation of the nation Israel. Paul, basically in Romans 11, is saying that the gifts and callings of God are not repented of. God doesn't change his mind. And in the Old Testament, he promised salvation to Israel. In the New Covenant, Jeremiah 31, Ezekiel 36. So God made a promise in the future to fulfill the Davidic covenant, fulfill the Abrahamic promise with the nation Israel. Even after they killed the Messiah, you remember in the early part of the book of Acts, Peter gets up and identifies what they had just done, but says, "You are still the people of God." God has a plan for the future salvation of Israel, because his gifts and callings are not subject to repentance. That doesn't mean that all Jews through all of human history will be saved. It means that there will be a time in the future when the nation Israel believes and is saved. And that is described in detail in the book of Zechariah, when they look on the one they've pierced, mourn for him as an only son, and a fountain of forgiveness and blessing is open to Israel. And then it follows into the kingdom.
That is Dr. John MacArthur describing the distinction between the church and Israel. There's still a future plan. And hey, speaking of future plans, that's right. We're known for our segues here at Wretched Radio. Would like to end the way we began in encouraging you. Would you please visit wretched.org? We are launching, not an Iranian attack, no. We are launching a brand new initiative. It is bold. It is big. It is our version of the Daily Wire with eight new voices, podcasts and videos and books and Sunday school resources. It is a massive initiative and undertaking, and we need your support. We have a $250,000 matching campaign right now. Would you please check it out and prayerfully consider supporting us as we launch this bold new initiative, wretched.org. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.